the next item on our agenda, item number 2, which is the briefing by the Minister of Public Safety and Administration on the structure of Center for Public Safety Innovation, which is called CPSI in short. Just to also begin with the introductory part before the briefing, the CPSI also is the institution that we did visit. We had an oversight, and as a matter of fact, we found that, yes, of course, it does reflect innovation in terms of establishment and the number of activities that we see taking place at that center. And the other issue is that we did attend the conference sometime, where we missed the last one, as I was, I was in the hospital, I remember. But the conference, we did attend the conference last time, and also there was a lot of innovative aspects that I've seen from the conference, which makes me believe that, of course, we can be innovative, you know, in terms of areas where we're not really doing well. That can be initiated, and it can be implementable. I refer specifically on the program that I saw of the disabled, which was also part of what was reflected at the conference presented on, and I just thought, you know, if, you know, on the side of the disability, such issues, such innovative issues, if they can be brought along, government will never miss the 2% statistics, because there will always be ways of how do we integrate that. That is why initially when we planned this program, we also have CPSI. We thought in the back of our minds, we're going to insist that they bring the project of innovation as it was presented in the past. We will get away with getting it, because we made a commitment last week when we had the disability sector, together with the department that deals with it. We made a commitment that is going to be an ongoing program, and therefore moving forward, we will force government to integrate those innovative ideas and implement what it committed itself before us, you know, to do, you know, on disability, and we'll use whatever we know, because once we are doing this oversight, it's not for fun. It's in order for us to see what is there, and if things are not happening, you know, on our oversight work, we'll force those aspects to come together, you know, because we always insist on collaboration with institutions, on working together on integration. So, of course, we haven't interacted much with CPSI. We gave it time because we knew that there are issues that they still have to deal with. I will allow CPSI to go through the presentation just to introduce that the CEO is here, that is Thuli Radebe. PS is the program chief director for research and development. That's Piers Schoenraad, ne? Yes, okay. So we are going to hand over to both of you. You will actually work it out how you deal with it. Over to you, Ms. Radebe.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members and colleagues, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to just take you through the CPSI very briefly, though. Because I suspect that many people have, in fact, listened to this presentation at some point. Those are the issues that I'm going to zoom through. I'll give you a bit of a background on the center, because we are not a very well-known institution or organization, and I will take you through the role and model, service delivery model of the CPSI, the web streams, the programs, the current structure, and later I will take you through the ideal structure, and then the challenges. The CPSI was established as a Section 21 company many years ago. I think it was 2001. And it really had an outsourcing model where expertise was contracted into the organization, and projects were run by experts that were contracted in. And the about five senior and middle managers' role was really to manage the contract. Now, when we became a government component in 2008, we decided to change the model and to build capacity within the state, within government. And so we appealed to the minister that we should, and in fact the new corporate form, the government component, allowed us to do that. And so we built capacity up to about 16 members. And you will see later in the structure how these 16 members are allocated around the organization. Now the role of the CPSI starts with bridging the gap between the national system of innovation, which is driven by science and technology, and service delivery. Our role is to bring innovation within government, focusing on service delivery improvement. So ours is to bring about service delivery innovations, models, creative models, approaches, gadgets. It's IT and non-IT innovations. And so we respond to all the sectors, to all the institutions, the departments that are actually delivering the services. You were talking education, health, SASA, or the area of social grants, and so on and so on. We are just a small entity, and we define our role in summary as unearthing, encouraging, rewarding, showcasing, piloting, and mainstreaming innovation in the public sector. And as I take you through the programs, you will get to understand how we do all of that. Unearthing, meaning that we find those innovations that do exist, even in the most remote areas of our country, because they are very innovative and creative people in the rural areas as well as in the urban areas. But we find those innovations and we ensure that we avoid what we call reinventing of the wheel by replicating those good practices where they can be replicated. But we also encourage, we work with specific departments to encourage them to think out of the box, to challenge themselves beyond boundaries, to find creative ways of responding to our service delivery challenges. We also have a program that awards those that we have found, and we pilot and test innovative solutions, whether it's gadgets or just approaches, as I've said earlier. Now, we have a service delivery model. We are forced to adopt this model. We do not deliver services as an institution, but we work with those that are. And so we partner with those sectors that deliver services. And in fact, we ensure that they play a leading role so that they are able to implement and mainstream those innovations within their departments. And we make sure that they take ownership of those innovations. So we partner with them from the stage of identifying challenges. Either they bring the challenges to us or we find the challenges ourselves, because in many instances those challenges are actually looking us in the face. They're on television, they're in newspapers and so on. Now we get together, we put together very strong stakeholder teams, experts from all the sectors, from government, from the private sector, from NGOs, from the academia, so that we interrogate the challenges thoroughly. And we then start exploring possible solutions as well as possible funding models. And I talk about models because we cannot use government money to test and pilot because of the risk element. There's always a risk of failure. So we do need the private sector to play a role, a conscious role, by providing us with that funding. We oversee the testing and the piloting. We actually drive that until it is a success. And once it is a success, I must say that we then hand over that innovation to the service delivery institution for implementation. They have to take ownership of it. So they mainstream, they do all sorts of things with it. And I will again use the example of the track and trace system that is actually being used very successfully by Home Affairs, the Department of Home Affairs, that it was conceptualized at the CPSI, driven by the CPSI, in collaboration with Home Affairs, with CETA, the State Information Technology Agency, and other private sector colleagues who actually funded the program. And once it was completed, it was handed over to Home Affairs. And fortunately for us, they implemented it successfully, and they continue to improve it. And then there's the issues of intellectual property. Government does tend, as government, we do tend to lose a lot of our intellectual property because it is not protected. Fortunately, the Department of Science and Technology has put in place an agency which is called TIA, the Technology innovation agency, which is really looking into issues of intellectual property. So we collaborate with them. They've developed guidelines that we use. And then, of course, as I said, we make sure that the ownership is appropriately allocated within the service delivery institution. One thing I omitted right at the beginning is that there is the national, the NSI, the National System of Innovation, which is driven by science and technology, and they actually focus more on science and technology. These are the people who came up with that electricity-driven car, and those are the kinds of innovations they focus on. They do come up with software systems as well, which can be very useful in the service delivery arena, and that is where we come in. That's where we partner with them to make sure that they look at the angle of service delivery. And they have approached us as well to say, come and work with us so that we do not develop systems that aren't usable. Come with the service delivery challenges, content, so that whatever systems we develop, they are really responding to identified challenges. Now, we have just three work streams in the organization. We have R&D, the research and development, and this one is to make sure that the solutions we come up with have been researched, that there's a real need for us to respond to those challenges. And that when we do, we're not just responding to what hits us in the face, that we're actually addressing the root causes, that we dig deep into the challenges, and that the solutions that we come up with are sustainable and are really responding to real-life challenges. The Solution Support and Incubation Chief Directorate looks is responsible for the piloting of those gadgets. They all three have to form partnerships, and this is the chief directorate that really has to form very strong partnerships, especially with the IT sector, because that is where the gadgets are developed. And then the enabling environment is to entrench the culture, to address the people issues. We have a challenge in that we need to get our public servants to be creative. We are getting them to be able to challenge themselves, as I said, to step out of their comfort zones. And I always use the example of a young nurse, in fact, she was a psychiatrist. She is a psychiatrist, and she was working for Natal Strait Hospital. And the one day she was facing a real challenge, and she had to turn asthmatic children away because she had run out of spacers. And what she did was she simply grabbed a Coke bottle and used it as a spacer, and she was able to admit many, many, many children into her ward. Now, that is the kind of culture that we're trying to instill in our public service. And that is what the enabling environment is trying to address. That is why we have those conferences where we pull all the public servants together to come and learn from one another and to share ideas. And that is, again, that is where the awarding program falls. She's responsible for the awards program and so on and so on. There's a number of things that are happening in each and every chief directorate. We have a very small corporate services unit which is located in the CEO's office. To make sure that there's compliance with all the regulations, both treasury and public service regulations and other pieces of legislation. We do have a need to have a strong stakeholder and partnership management unit at the moment because of capacity challenges that is located within each and every chief directorate but coordinated within the CEO's office. We need the private sector, as I said. They also have their corporate social investment money that is available, that they want to make available to government to assist in many ways. And they found that the CPSI is we give them access to service delivery institutions, to a clinic, to a school, or any other institution for them to test and pilot some of their solutions that they normally would want to sell to government, off-the-shelf solutions, as we call them, and that don't necessarily address our challenges. So now we are giving them an opportunity to come and test and pilot them in the schools and clinics and any other service, social development offices, free of charge, and we are able to form those partnerships. And also we need to be managing the sponsorships and all sorts of other support. Now, as I said very briefly, just to take you through some of the programs that we have and why we have them, the awards program is, we call it the primary feeder, in that it gives us best practices, it gives us all those innovative projects that we then feed into our multimedia innovation center. It is a multimedia innovation center with many repositories, and we make sure that we put all those best practices in those repositories so that the public servants come to the CPSI and they're able to sit and look through all those and see how they can inform their own initiatives. Now, once we have all these best practices, obviously they end up in our journal, they're presented at conferences, but importantly, they are replicated. And we want to make sure that once a best practice has been identified in Limpopo, there's no need for KZN to go and restart the process and start investigating it. There might be the issues of adaptation and so on, but if it's already there, they must just replicate. I've spoken to the Innovation Center, its existence. We have a network of past innovators. Once people have come through the CPSI, we've identified their projects and so on, we pull them in as our innovators. And that is, for instance, why we were able to take a school principal from Limpopo at some point, and we took her and put her in Helen Joseph Hospital in Johannesburg for a week to assist the team there to start their own innovative project. In fact, it was just a permaculture garden that they started, and they used it to feed they're still using it to feed the patients, but importantly, they've been able to find other uses, very constructive sort of uses. For instance, they are using it for therapy with psychiatric patients and stroke patients. But we that is what we do. We take these people, we identify them as innovators, and we send them around the country to assist us in taking, in spreading the innovations. And then, of course, there are new innovations all the time. I think we've reported on the projects that we are doing with the South African Police Service and many private sector partners to come up with what they call a war room. It has another special name, but what they want to be able to do is to manage crime real time, to be able to be sitting in their offices. This is within the Honeydew area in Johannesburg, where we are testing and piloting and setting up a center for them, so that they'll be able to identify a crime happening, and they are able to move around and identify a police car. They've even formed a partnership with even the private security companies, so that they can identify and send them straight to that crime as it is happening. That is what we are pulling together, and those are the kinds of partnerships one is referring to. And of course, the example that our chair refers to is of the gadget for visually challenged teachers that we pulled together. We obviously we worked with the National Council for the Blind, the Department of Basic Education and so on, and the private sector and sort of IT companies, and we produced something. What we found was that all these visually challenged teachers were not even able to read circulars, and they could not manage the classroom. You know, this is what we saw as we visited around. And that is what made us come up with this gadget. And they can read their circulars, they can access books, they can do also, they can communicate. It's just working very well for them. And what we need to do now, what we're waiting for, is for the ministers to exchange. Our minister must hand it over to the Minister of Basic Education for further roll out, and they will let us know what else they want to do with it. We also do manage the UNPAN portal for the United Nations. We coordinate the content for SADC, and we get a lot of best practices as well into that, and so on and so on. Now, this is the current structure. There is the executive director, the CEO, and there's the PA, there's the corporate services. This is what we have. This is where all these, the people that we have at the moment, which is really we are very thin on the ground, as we like to say. And you will see the red means that all those officials are doubling up as something else. PA is Research and Development Chief Director, but he's also doubling up at the moment as the Corporate Services Manager. And then the administrators also doubling up as various other things. And it's not ideal, and that is why we have later, you will see, I will present what we call the ideal structure. Now, as you can see, there are just those three chief directorates with administrators. Research and Development has two deputy directors. The C means that it is a contract post. The V, there was a V sitting up there, corporate services, means that it is vacant, it's currently being filled. So although it's a very small structure, we still have vacancies. And I will not spend time on this slide because it simply captures what I've just presented to you. And we're now working on supplementing the structure. And the reason we are is because of the demands that are that we have as the organization. I've referred to broad-based replication, and we want now to leverage mobile. We've been tasked by the minister to come up with mobile solutions, you know, to must be able to take services to the people, and we're still investigating that with our CSIR, as well as the Innovation Hub, who have established a mobile lab, and they're going to allow us to have access to the developers of solutions. And I just listed those, we listed those organizations there that have actually come to us and requested us to help them. SARS, National Treasury, the Department of Labor, Ekurhuleni and Sedibeng municipalities, the Department of Health, SASSA, all of these people have come to request us for some, they need innovation within their sectors, and they've approached us. And we need to bolster up governance, the governance of the organization. We're just talking about the corporate services to make sure that we comply, that we comply as we are required to comply to all the regulations. And what we've done is we've approached Treasury, and we they've will indicate how they've supported us to give us, to support us in terms of the budget, and they've made some funding available to us from their donor funding. We've approached the DPSA, the unit that is responsible for structures, and they're working with us on coming up with an appropriate structure. And of course, we do have short-term contracts just to help us move along at the moment. I won't talk to the budget. It is clear that that's what we have. In fact, what we have is we get 2% of the DPSA's allocation. Yes, it's 2%, and our dream is that it's pushed up. I think the intervention by Treasury has probably pushed it to about 3%, but we're still up talking to the DPSA to see if they can push it to, you know, at least 4% of their budget. The gaps, I'm going to take you through the ideal structure right now. You will find that they are, what Treasury has allowed us to do is to have contract posts. And this will be for 2 years and for 3 years. And whilst we appreciate that, because we'll be able to drive to respond to these requests and challenges, but at the same time, you know the insecurities that come with contract posts. People will be in the post for a year and they'll start looking around, and that's not good for, you know, consistency and continuity and sustainability. We need to strengthen corporate governance. At the moment, because there's less than 50 of us, we have to use DPSA's corporate services. We have to use their HR. We have to use, you know, all those services, internal audit and so on. It's not ideal. We're trying to find innovative ways, creative ways. We're talking to Treasury and DPSA to allow us at least to have an operational budget that we can use. We have people wanting to give us money, especially the private sector. They don't want to have to manage that money for us as well. They want to release it to us, but they don't want to put it into Treasury's coffers, because it's very difficult to get it out, especially for innovation. When you have to purchase items for some of these projects, you can't use the National Treasury, I mean our fiscus, government fiscus. Technical capabilities, we do need a lot of project management expertise and so on and so on. And that is the ideal structure I'm talking about. You will see that it's multicolored. Green is what exists, so that is all we have at the moment. And then the red is what we would like to have. It's all unfunded, but it's the ideal what we would like to have. And Treasury has funded all the ones that are appearing in yellow, and this is from the 1st of April. It's only in this coming year. Now, what we would like to see is for all of these boxes to be green, because then it will mean that we have all of these posts. And it's still less than 50. I think it's 30-something posts. But I don't, because you have it in your hands, I don't want to go through each and every one of those. But it's at least each chief directorate would be somewhat adequately resourced for us to be able to do at least the basic things and to drive our projects as well that we are very passionate about. And at the moment, yes, these are the challenges. We are not fully resourced. I think that is obvious. And I think things didn't happen when we moved from the one model into the other, when we grew from 5 to about 16 people. Some people were moved from the DPSA, but not with their operational budget. And that is where the problem is. You are still using the operational budget of about 5 people to support 16 or so posts. There was a moratorium in the DPSA, and they stopped the recruitment processes, and we got caught in that as well because we are part of, you know, because our budget sits with them. Whilst the Public Service Act determined the accountability, and the ED, the Executive Director, is the accounting officer, the PFMA has not been aligned, especially in relation to government components with less than 50 staff members. Again, I repeat, we are talking to Treasury with the DPSA to address that issue. And of course, we need to open a trading account. As I said, private sector partners want to give us money, but they don't want to put it into government money because it's not easy to use it from their own innovative, because of the risk of failure, whereas you test and pilot. I would like to leave it at that. I must say, though, Chair, if you'll allow me, that when we last presented, we were facing real challenges, especially because the government notice had not been gazetted, the MOU was not finalized, but at this stage, things have improved because the notice was gazetted, so we are a fully-fledged government component. The MOU was finalized between us and the DPSA, and we have a working arrangement between us. And we're talking with Treasury and DPSA on giving us better resources and so on. So there's a bit of light, but we need your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Matt Tulikatebe, with the presentation. Honourable members, if the issues you need to find out, any discussions on this matter, Honourable Manana, Honourable Williams, Honourable Mohali, then Honourable Manana.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to know, in your financial statement for this financial year, for 12-13, 6.1 million rand is budgeted for goods and services, and I just want to know what percentage of that money will be spent on consultants, excluding the consultants you're getting from the three-year contractors. So if you're getting any other consultants to do any of the work, I want to know how much of the 6.1 million rand in your goods and services column is going to be spent on that. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Williams. Honourable Mohali.
Thank you, Chair. My question would be around what you usually like to talk about, collaboration of institutions, to say where do you meet with CETA? What is your common ground? Because CETA is doing the information technology, and you are also on innovation and technologically advanced. And I also need clarity on your relationship with the Department of Science and Technology. In your presentation, I couldn't get your relation. It's just like when you've got something, then you'll talk to them. But what forms part of your relationship? Do you have a memorandum of understanding? Or what? The other thing is concerning these innovations, to say, then how do you go out and look for these innovations? Do people come to you, or do you go out there and search for innovations that are out there? And also my other interest will be around the presentation that the Honourable Chairperson talked about on the issue of disability. To say, if you really have got something like this, where did it end? Because you can't come up with something that is good and it ends with yourselves. It has to go out there. People should know about it. You should be able to market your products. And I think that's all, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Mohale. Honorable Manana.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, what I want to raise is exactly around what Honorable Mohale is concerned about, because I'm not getting a sense that these institutions are actually aligned, whether there is an integrated approach, whether they're working in silos, or whether indeed there is some form of alignment through memorandum of understandings, probably clarify us on that, in relations to the ones that are stationed in the Department of Science and Technology, CETA, yourselves, and others that we may not know of, that actually speak to innovation, that speaks to you know, new ways and methods of technology. What is actually the approach? Is it integrated? Are you working in silos? Are the memorandum of understanding that you sign with the different organizations, are they working? Are they bearing any fruit that is actually taking innovation forward? What is the situation? Because it would be unfortunate if indeed the ultimate objective is not achieved precisely because everybody is working in silos. If a department decides to establish its own unit of innovation, it does that. And if the other decides to do it tomorrow, there is no problem. They'll just establish a unit. And then you'd find that the work of government, or rather of the public service as a whole, is then not well coordinated moving forward. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks. Yeah, honourable members, any other question before the members start to dance in their chairs, like Honourable Nyeke? Okay. Metuli.
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to talk to some of these, respond to some of these, and I will give my colleague an opportunity to respond, especially to the one around the consultants and the percentage and so on. Let me start on the issue of collaboration, especially with all those institutions within science and technology. There is what we call the National System of Innovation, which is driven by the Department of Science and Technology. In fact, they also established what we call NACI, excuse me, which is the National Advisory Council on Innovation. They advise the Minister of Science and Technology on innovation. I served on that. When I first came in 2007, I served on NACI for a year. And my objective by serving on that, and the Minister supported it, was to make sure that they got to hear about the Center for Public Service Innovation and what we do, because we wanted to form a strong partnership with them. And so they know about us now. We have a partnership with them, with the Department of Science and Technology. They also have the CSIR. They also have established the Science Parks, the Innovation Hub, in partnership with the City of Johannesburg, and so on and so on. Now, we have an arrangement with the Department of Science and Technology that they do not run anything without us that involves. As I said earlier, they are focusing on science innovations. And I made the example of a car that is run on electricity. And they come up with many, Pierre will talk to some of the things that they do, like mesh, wireless, this and that, or wireless mesh, and software systems, and all of those things. That they just put in place, the Miraka Institute as well, which I forgot, and then they ask themselves, where can we use it? Now we're changing that with them. That is what I was talking about when I said they've asked us to bring them the service delivery content, if you like. We bring the challenges to them to say, now we're saying to them, we need to come up with mobile services. We need to take services even in the area as difficult as water, people are struggling to get water in the rural areas. How can we get it to them? You know, we know that the mobile police started at some point, there are mobile police and so on. SASA have mobile services, but they've come to us as well to say, please help us more. Now we're talking to them to say we need to come up with solutions that will help us in that area. And we're bringing all these problems to them. When SASA invites us to a meeting, we don't go without science and technology because we want them to be. When we meet with SEPs to address the Honeydew project, we take science and technology with us. The guys from Meraka are sitting on the committee. The people from the Innovation Hub are on the committee. And they are listening and starting to propose solutions. That is what we're doing. As I said, we're closing the gap between us. We're bringing service delivery needs to science and technology. CETA, as you know, is we call them family because we report to the same minister and we have many, many meetings together. The R&D, which what I must say is we have an R&D unit. They also have an R&D unit. Science and technology have, the Innovation Hub have R&D. What we're doing amongst ourselves is we're sharing the wisdoms that are coming from all of us. We don't have money to really to even pay consultants to do real empirical research, you know, original research. We form partnerships with them. We say we have a challenge that needs to be investigated. What do you have? What we have found is that in many instances, the answers we're looking for are already existing in many institutions that have R&D units. With CETA, they were forming this. They had the same challenge. They came to us, they said, please work with us because we do come up with these things, we don't know where to use them. So we're channeling them to service delivery. We started, remember, we didn't even have accommodation, you know, as when did you get into accommodation? 2009. We were sitting, at some point there were 16 of us in an office space of 5. And we got out and we set ourselves where we are, but we do have, all I'm trying to say is that we do have very strong partnerships. We wouldn't survive without them. And what they are communicating to us is that they will never make inroads into service delivery if we do not allow them, if we don't partner with them. We do sign MOUs, but we found that it doesn't work sometimes to have a generic MOU. So the MOUs are around specific projects. Once there's a project that we are working on, then we develop an MOU. He can talk to some of those. How do we find innovations? We have an awards program. What we're doing now is we have forms. We're sending teams out to all the provinces, to schools, to local government, anywhere. We're putting it on our website. We put it in the newspapers. We are soliciting entries. People are coordinating their projects. It's a well-known program now, and they send their entries. We will receive up to about 160 entries by the closing date, which is July. And then we have a selection. We have a panel of adjudicators, which is from various organizations. It's a whole process. And then on the 2nd of November, because we have to know from the beginning of the year when, on the 2nd of November, we have an awards program, and that is where we bring all those projects together, we train them more, we do all sorts of things, but it's a year-long program that we run that helps us identify these projects. And in some instances, you will be approached by an individual to say, I have an innovation here that I think you might find useful. Obviously, we have to channel them. If it's something to do with social grants, we have to then invite, that's where we invite the Department of SASA and Social Development and the same people to sit around and say, he says he has a solution, how can it assist? But we do have we're always looking out for projects. We came into the issue of disability really through this gadget, which is for visually challenged teachers. We actually purchased how many? 20? Because we found that there's how many schools? 20 schools in the country that have visually challenged teachers. In some instances, it's actually schools for sighted children or learners, and in other instances, it is schools for visually challenged pupils. Now, we put a gadget in each and every one of those. That was during the pilot stage. We put it together, then we put it there to make sure, giving them time to test it. They tested, they gave us inputs in terms of what was working, what wasn't working, what more they wanted to see put into the gadget. Then we reworked the gadget, and then but we supplied to each and every school. That is where there's one gadget per school. Now, once the minister does the handover to the Minister of Basic Education, we are hoping that that is now going to impact on policy. That's going to inform policy, that the Department of Basic Education is now going to take over and make sure that maybe each and every teacher, obviously all the teachers have, but that it is extended to the children. So right now the gadget is sitting in those schools being used by the... I would like to invite my colleague to talk to, especially to the issue of consulting.
Thank you, Chair. The short answer in terms of the consultants is around 10% of the budget, mainly towards content development and specialized conversion of content for the Innovation Center, and then towards our journal, the final editing and layout and design, and that's just because we don't have internal capacity. Part of the presentation to National Treasury is to actually build that internal capacity to remove those barriers. But I just want to add, Chair, is that a budget like of 6 million when I was still in the NGO sector sounded a lot of money. The problem is once we've just dealt with the basic accountability issues, the office and all of those things, half of that budget is gone. So we've got a very limited budget. At the moment, the budget is sufficient to look at corporate services and to run one of our chief directorates. That's the reality of the budget. So we actually just don't have money to pay consultants, and we believe that we, as the CEO said, to build that in those internal capacities. Sometimes it is important to bring in, specifically when we start with the development of mobile applications. We can appreciate that area of development is so rapid that every 6 months there's something new on the table. So that's why we have those partnerships with the MLab, so that we use their developers. But the basis is then in terms of SMME development and not to pay some other large consultant. I also would want to say is that there are a number of projects where we leverage corporate social investment. For example, we've got consultants on the Honeydew project, we've got consultants coming in on other initiatives from corporations like MTN and Microsoft and so on. But those are in-kind contributions so that we don't take money from the baseline. Just to give the broader picture. Just to add to the question about the collaboration, just to remind members is that our innovations are many a time a combination of ICT and non-ICT. So when it comes to, for example, the ICT side, we work very closely with CETA. But the ICT sometimes is just a small part, and it's not talking to the real challenge behind it. So it's a much broader approach. So we have to work between the national system of innovation, communities, NGOs, private sector, and bring all of those around the table so that the innovative solutions come up. Also, just to add to the question about disability, It pains us sometimes as much as it pains members that we can't take projects further than we want to take them. But we just don't have the capacity. It's that typical catch-22 situation. And if you talk to us about the disability issue, there are so many ideas that we have on the table. But it's just impossible for us to pursue them at the moment. And I think that's the biggest frustration that our staff members have, is the actual implementation need to happen in departments. And they need to take it further, and that is a frustration that we want to share. But we are trying to be innovative about dealing with that. Just around the how do we get innovations? The CEO referred to our awards program, which is, as she said, the biggest feeder. But obviously when we start engaging with projects like the Honeydew project, like the Maritime project that we are, then we do proper research. so that we identify those innovations, whether it's in our national system of innovation or whether it's international, so that we can bring that into the discussion and if further development is needed. So with institutions such as the CSIR, with Maraca, the Innovation Hub, we have regular engagements, not in terms of an MOU, but in terms of understanding where are they doing their developments, so that we can make those linkages. For example, the beginning of last year, Maraca presented to us what they are doing about spatial imaging, satellite imaging, and the wonderful things that they are doing. So we started cooperating, and we've already pulled them into one project so that they can bring that knowledge into. We are going to be pulled into one of their projects around disaster management so that we can make the link with local government and with national government. So it's very organic, and that's how we prefer it to be, because otherwise we're just managing MOUs, and it will never come to an innovation. So we pull each other on those stakeholder teams so that we take that further. And that also includes other entities, entities such as ESCOM, entities such as government departments, where we pull them in around the table so that they start sharing ideas and come up with new solutions. Some of these projects doesn't cost a cent to us, because people use other mechanisms of funding to implement once they come around the table. Yes, for example, the Inland Maritime Safety Project is a very strange project which started off with just a simple innovation around unique positioning numbers, to put that around some of our waterways so that if there's an accident, if there's an incident, people can SMS that number. It goes to the emergency services and identified individuals around the water body. But once we got all the stakeholders around the table to implement this very simple innovations, people came up with all sorts of other problems. So now we have Water Affairs talking to Environmental Affairs around the problem of alien plants in the water, and we came up with a new innovation about wash bays, because the boating fraternities are the ones that are carrying these alien plants. The wash bays are now in place. The boating fraternity pays 10 rand or so for which that's the project we're busy piloting, for washing. That creates jobs within the EPWP, so we anticipate another 1,000 jobs to be created within the EPWP Working for Water program, just because suddenly, after how many years, these entities are talking to each other about the common problem that they are sharing, and the innovations are then generated. The CSIR is on the same team because we need their satellite imaging for understanding how the waterways work. So this is just an explanation of how organic we try to facilitate the process going forward and making those connections. I hope I've responded to all the questions. Just one last, with your indulgence, Chair, is I just want to remind members that the Minister has put in place a MinPort meeting that meets at least quarterly, where all the heads of his portfolio institutions come together and then share the challenges. And that's the facility that we use to identify to CETA, for example, where we need their collaboration going forward. Because Minister identified this as a problem where the institutions are not working together or working in silos.
Finished. Okay. Honourable members, I want to believe that we have actually touched on a number of other areas, and even we got more information. Safe to indicate that we will be still meeting with CPSI on other areas, and of course also on areas where we're not satisfied, there will be follow-up in a form of questions. But also where we think we want to practically see the process taking place, we will actually request them to come back, you know, with various institutions, you know, because what we want to see now is the practical implementation. I can see the commissioners are picking And I just wanted to indicate that I'm definitely going to give them to comment before we close. Of course, we are closing now. But they cannot leave without breathing, you know, into this meeting. Based on you know, any other matter they really want to comment on. But safe to indicate that we want to thank the CPSI for the presentation, and just to indicate, particularly on the issues of disability, our program moving forward, we would like you to package all innovative ideas, because the next step that we want to deal with is its issues, that are practical issues that we can be able to deal with. We will be challenging both the department that also spearheads issues of disability together with DPSA to bring on board all areas, particularly departments that are not performing so well, so that we're able to bring them around the table and give them ideas in terms of how best can we deal with this matter, because it's one matter that really puts us in a bad situation as a country if we are unable to do well. And therefore, we will also make sure that you do come. Other matters, of course, like I indicated, it will be in the form of asking the minister. And therefore, we appreciate the presentation. Thank you very much with your leadership, Khadebe, and thanks to UPS as well. Yeah, honorable members, with tight time, and I know that we are rushing to next meetings, I really request that I give the commissioners some space to just have some few words on these matters. Over to you, Mira.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thank you again to for asking us to be here. Chair, maybe just very shortly on the presentation that was done by the GP, the PCSCBC, in terms of some of the challenges that they've outlined. One of the things that one, for example, didn't hear them speaking about is the fact that when we're talking about the bargaining council, to some extent there's inherent contradictions in terms of how the bargaining council is structured. That's what they haven't really spoken to, and I'm assuming that it's quite difficult, because you have the employer and you have labor sitting in one structure. One of the questions, for example, that came to my mind was, who takes responsibility for the well-being of the structure, given the fact that they've outlined some of the challenges, the fact that certain issues take very long to resolve. We, as the Public Service Commission, also in dealing with our own grievance rules, 3 years ago we have submitted some proposals to the Bargaining Council in terms of discussing how we would like to see the rules changed. And up till now, the matter has not been discussed at the bargaining council. So I mean, we're dealing with them. But for me, probably one of the biggest challenges is the fact that here you have a structure where both labor and the employer are sitting together, each representing its own interests, and those interests are inherently contradictory. So if, for example, who then takes the responsibility of the well-being of the structure? Because I'm not going to put the structure first if that means I have to sort of compromise the mandate of the sector that I'm there for. And I think those are some of the challenges that probably needs to be discussed as well. Other than that, I think the presentation was very well done, and quite a number of issues that they were addressing, I think they've put on the table. The one thing also that maybe one should ask them for more ideas on, or taking the because they outline the challenges and then they put forward specific solutions. But again, who puts those things on the agenda of the bargaining council? If there are certain employees, for example, who are not represented because of where they are, they've made the example, it's both in corrections and in subs, where you have people working for the same institution or the same department, and yet they have two different bargaining councils dealing with the employees. For me, it's quite important that those things should probably be scheduled on the agenda, and I think maybe that's the reason why, for example, they said there should be more oversight over the bargaining council, because someone else has to hold the two parties or the parties to the bargaining council responsible for making it succeed, whether it's a sectoral council or whether it's the central council. Then in terms of the CPSI, we have been knowledgeable about the work of the CPSI. Also once had the opportunity, or I had the privilege of being with them when they were reaching out into Africa, when we had the EPSCOM's meeting in Malawi, where again, in terms of putting forward the idea of innovations to make things easier, we had our own IEC, for example, winning a gold at that award ceremony, which was now the African or Southern African award ceremony. And I must say I was quite proud, and I'm sure the CPSI played a role in assisting the IEC to present their innovation at that level. So I really think with a few people that they do have, they are trying as hard as they can to bring innovation forward. Maybe just the other thing also, which could relate to the capacity shortages, in terms of ordinary public servants, I know that they are encouraged to come up with innovations to make their work easier, but I don't think the message has filtered down to that level. I am based in a province, and that could be one of the challenges maybe that they still need to address. Thanks, Jay.
Okay, thank you very much. You can proceed.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. I think we have been able to get information from the PSCBC that confirms our observation as a Public Service Commission. And I think it also gives us leverage or platform to be able to engage them, because we work with them on other issues. We really appreciate that you invited us. Thanks.
Okay, thank you to the commissioners. Is there anything, Commissioner Susan?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe just to conclude from the side of the Public Service Commission, part of it is to say that we really appreciate the reports and the working progress that we have with the commission, you know, and the progress that we reach, you know, our communication is filtering to one another, you know, once we have a complaint of this nature, it's addressed once, you know, even from the side when the issues that are raised, we remain prepared as the committee to take them up. Part of why also I really thought that you should be part of this meeting is that I believe there's quite a lot, particularly on the side of the public service bargaining, coordinating council. You know, our bargaining council has a lot that we still need to look into and engage. You know, we do need sometime we will have concrete discussions. Yes, we do bring reports to the committee, but at some point we believe that the committee must commission you to actually look into particular areas, package a particular report being that one of the public of the bargaining of the coordinating bargaining council. And I'm glad if the commissioners are starting to actually talk on other matters, but we need to move further than that, because at some point we'd need the report to come back to the committee so that we can be able to engage with the coordinating bargaining council in its presence and the stakeholders. We would see how to approach the matter, but we felt that it's necessary for us to actually talk to this independent body, the Chapter 10 that we work with, that there is a need for us to look further into the bargaining council structure, and we'll appreciate if that request can be accepted. We know that there's quite a lot that will be taken, the budget, the plans and so on, but that is what we wanted to put across. And we appreciate that you were able to respond and be part of the meeting. Thank you very much to yourselves, Commissioner. Thank you, CPSI, and those who are representing the department. Thanks to everyone, honorable members. Honorable Manana, do you still want to... Okay, thank you. All right, I know members want to quickly rush to other meetings. Just reminding members that the multi-party caucus, women's caucus, is sitting, and I'm Honorable Manana and all other honorable members know that the Public Service Administration, it's a leader of a cluster for governance, and therefore All these matters, you know, are our matters because they're issues of governance, and therefore we definitely have to have that information. And I would really want to emphasize that members should understand the issues of disability, issue of gender, issue, you know, of children, of youth, to be issues of mainstreaming, and therefore we do have direct interest on those matters, and we also have to play a leadership role in terms of being public safety and administration. We would encourage those who do not, who won't be in the PDF meeting, to be in the Women Caucus, and we will share the information thereafter. Thank you very much to everyone. The meeting is adjourned.